Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBF FX Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, I have Tom Basore. You first heard about Tom when Evan McKenzie was on and told us a little bit about Tom and the wonderful things he's doing with an organization called SOAR, which I believe stands for Streeterville Organization of Active Residents. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
And we have to let the guests, our listeners, know that you are the first person ever to be interviewed on our brand new board here. So that's a distinction. Tom,
hopefully we'll do a good job.
You're doing great. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Tom.
Okay, well, I am an attorney and a city planner by training. I have both law degrees and also a degree in city planning from the University of Illinois at Chicago. And I live right in the central city area of Chicago in a neighborhood known as Streeterville, which is basically bounded by Michigan Avenue and the lake and the Chicago River. So it's right down in the thick of a very vibrant and active area of the city, which includes a lot of tourism, Northwestern University, Navy Pier. We've got all kinds of things going on in Streeterville, not the least of which is an ever-increasing number of residential condominium units. We've had probably 8 to 10 condo towers built here over the past 10 years. And so there's quite a large residential presence in Streeterville in the neighborhood where I live.
And is that is it the residents that you've been organizing, or is it everybody?
Well, primarily, I think we're talking about my involvement in the SOAR group, which you're correct. It stands for the Streeterville Organization of Active Residents. And we are a long-existing community advocacy organization. Of course, like all organizations, we're evolving with time as different issues present themselves. We try to be responsive and, you know, just preserve the community lifestyle that we're accustomed to. We advocate for improvements to our community in terms of open space and pedestrian amenities and high-quality developments. We pretty much run the gamut. We characterize ourselves generally as a community advocacy group. And the part of that group that I'm most involved in happens to be this Condominium Advisory Council, where we bring the leaders together, leaders from condo board associations, and we meet on a monthly basis to network, to collaborate, to give one another ideas about what's working and what's not working in our buildings. And it's really been quite a fascinating initiative that I've been involved in for about the past year. And it's just working magic to, you know, just bring people together and help us avoid reinventing the wheel as we, you know, try to make our communities high-quality places to live.
When we first talked, Tom, you said that one of the things that you tried to do was bring in sort of different ideas and let condo board members know that they didn't really have to be heavy-handed and abusive, that there was a different way of achieving their goals.
Yeah, there's
not in so many words, but did I get it sort of more or less correct?
Well, I'm not so sure that that's necessarily a theme of our organization, because that's not really, it really hasn't been a problem for us. The initiative here in Streeterville has been more born out of a positive initiative to, you know, build high quality communities and, you know, reduce our costs, provide better amenities, and just kind of work with one another to share ideas. So I wouldn't necessarily characterize the initiative as responsive to heavy-handedness or anything bad that's happening, but instead it's been just a desire to, you know, collaborate with one another, get to know our neighbors, and to find out what the building down the block has been up to. So it's just been a really good experience from that perspective.
So you're really building community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's kind of born out of my own passion for urban living and city planning. You know, basically the premise is that the city can be a very cold and impersonal place, and even our condominium buildings where we all come and go in our rush to get to work or wherever we're going, we tend to zip in and out of our homes and have fairly minimal interaction. So what SOAR does, and specifically the Condominium Advisory Council with respect to our board leadership, is we give people excuses to meet the neighbors and to share information and ideas and to try to make this a little less of an impersonal place to be.
How much of that is, do you have like social gatherings and social events and so on?
Absolutely. We have monthly social gatherings. We call them our First Wednesday events, where we might meet in a restaurant or a theater or some venue in our neighborhood or, you know, short distance away so that we can get together. We've got a bunch of different committees. We have an aging issues council for the seniors. We have a neighbors action task force that specifically looks at development proposals in the neighborhood. We have, of course, your Crime Stopper type of initiative where we meet with the local police precincts to talk about crime, and we have a greening committee. So you name it, we've got it. It's all really dependent on the particular interests of the most active members here with our organization.
So these are just all the committee members who get together. I guess I was wondering if you were bringing in people from, you know, all of the residents in the condos, if you had any kind of social activities for them, organized social events.
Yeah, basically those are all the things I was just talking about. The condo affairs committee for the condo board leadership is a very specific sub-element of the SOAR group, and it's just that group that gets together and talks about, you know, condominium operations and that sort of thing. But all those other initiatives I mentioned are, you know, neighborhood-wide. They're open to anybody who cares to participate.
My sister lives in Geneva, Switzerland, and in their building they have, it's called the Neighbors Night. And they all put together a potluck, and I guess they have a big garden, and they all bring something. They all bring a dish, and they share it and have a really nice time. And she's been talking about this for a long time. She's, you know, she'll say, oh, it's our neighbor's night, and this is what I'm making. And it sounds, people from other areas want to come. It started off as a social event, strictly social.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's been doing very, very well. So I just, you know, threw that out. But what's a greening committee, Tom?
Well, like many cities and urban areas, we over time have developed an excess of concrete and a, you know, not so much green space. So our greening committee is a committee of local residents who look for opportunities to advocate for more pedestrian amenities, trees, grass, less pavement, that sort of thing. But I guess I'm speaking maybe a little too restrictively about the Greening Committee because they also address issues of sustainability. So greening from a broader perspective, the committee advocates for recycling initiatives, recycling amenities to improve and facilitate people trying to, you know, do good for the earth. It's amazing what you can do in a 500 or 600 unit high rise if you provide adequate facilities for people to recycle. On the other hand, if you do not provide adequate facilities, it's a lot easier for people just to throw all their stuff in the trash. So some of the activities of the Greening Committee involve advocating for state-of-the-art recycling amenities that promote that kind of thing. And then there's also energy conservation, water conservation, green roofs is a big topic in Chicago right now. Our mayor, Richard Daley, has a big affinity for promoting green roofs.
What's a
green roof is an amenity where you replace your standard rooftop, coatings of tar and paper with landscaping material. And it's amazing what you can do to reduce the ambient temperature of the roof just by switching from, you know, tar and paper to some kind of a grass or an amenity that people, you know, can enjoy looking out at, if not actually traveling upon.
I was going to say, do you have, like, patios and places where the residents can go up and maybe hold parties and or just sit down and have a drink and watch the sunset in the evenings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially the newer developments. I believe the city encourages that practice by offering certain incentives, like they might speed up your plan review process by a few weeks, or they might cut you a break on some kind of permit fees if you agree to install, you know, rooftop green amenities. But then it's not only the new developments. The older developments are also getting on the bandwagon, trying to, you know, if there's already an existing rooftop grilling area, they might install some planters and some, you know, some form of landscaping. And it's really kind of neat to see this. I'd have to say there's dozens, if not a couple of hundred, green roofs within the central city area of Chicago. And it seems like more and more are coming online each day. It seems to be the new trend.
We're talking to Tom Besore. Tom is with an organization in Chicago called Streeterville Organization of Active Residents, and he seems to be very active in a number of different areas. The green roof sounds interesting because I grew up in a city, and we had one in our house. We had a roof garden, and we used to hold really neat parties and things up there. So I kind of like that, but when you have an area like Chicago that gets a fair amount of snow, what happens with the snowfall? Where does the snow go? I thought with colder climates where you have snow, you wanted pitched roofs so the snow would fall off. Is that not an issue?
Well, no, because buildings are designed with such engineering characteristics that they can withstand the snow. And perhaps it's because of that engineering that the green roof is able to be supported on these particular rooftops. But, you know, as I look out my window over, you know, dozens of high-rise condos that I can see, they all have flat roofs. They're designed, it's amazing what you can do with steel and concrete and, you know, the appropriate drainage, of course. So all these buildings are very well engineered to support snow, wind, rain, whatever.
Maybe the newer ones, yes, but when you said that you're retrofitting some of the older ones, I know a few years ago we had some very heavy snowfalls here that were uncharacteristic, and we had a lot of roofs that collapsed. Malls were closed for weeks because the roofs just couldn't handle all the snow. People were climbing up in the middle of the snowstorm trying to shovel off snow off their roofs. So I know it was sort of an interesting time there, but we don't normally get a whole lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think those parts of the country that are accustomed to snow have their buildings designed in such a fashion that it's able to support it. Even the old buildings. While we're speaking here, I did a Google search of Green Roof Chicago, and I came up with some images that appeared in the results. And among those images are the green roof on our city hall. And the Chicago City Hall was built, I don't know, decades ago. It's an old, classic municipal building. And that particular building is fascinated because the building is separated in two sides. There's the city side and there's the county side. And if you look at the images on the internet, it's only the city side that's been converted to a green roof. And you can see that it's just beautiful. They've got all kinds of prairie grasses and flowers and plantings. I even think they have some beekeeping apparatus up there as a demonstration of what you can do when you really set your mind to doing something out of the ordinary. So my point is that half of the roof is the traditional tar and paper that you'd see anywhere, and then the other half is this beautiful urban oasis that provides, you know, a lot of cooling effect and also something nice to look at, especially from the adjoining buildings that happen to look over the rooftop.
I'm going to switch a little bit on you, but your mission, I've got your mission and vision and value statements and your goals for SOAR here, and SOAR works, your mission statement is SOAR works on behalf of residents of Streeterville by preserving, promoting, enhancing the quality of life and community. And I guess what you're talking about does exactly that, right?
Absolutely. We're just a group of neighbors that want to, you know, make a difference. And it's funny that, you know, the participation with SOAR runs the gamut. Everyone from, you know, young professionals who've recently moved into the neighborhood to retirees who've been here for, you know, 40 years. One of my most enjoyable things to do is to converse with some of our you know, retired residents who are fond of talking about the neighborhood, for instance, before the John Hancock Tower was in existence. And that, you know, used to be the tallest building in America, and it was built in like 1969. And so we get folks that talk about the area, you know, back in the good old days before there was all this urban development. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, we get participation from professionals, from seniors, from, you know, people of all different walks of life who have occasion to live here. And that's the whole point, is to draw people out of their homes and to communicate with one another and, you know, just kind of make our place a smaller city.
You, the other day when we were talking, you said that Chicago was comprised of, what, about 140, 150 little neighborhoods, and Streeterville was one of them. Would you talk a little bit about the division of Chicago and exactly where Streeterville is and what that is?
Well, Streeterville itself is probably well known to many people. If they don't know the name Streeterville, they certainly know the neighborhood if they've been to Chicago, because one of our borders is the Magnificent Mile, which is a mile-long area along Michigan Avenue where you have all of your trendy stores like the Apple Store and the Disney Store and the women's clothing stores, you know, all the fancy shopping districts on North Michigan Avenue. That comprises our westernmost boundary. And then our easternmost boundary is only about, you know, less than a mile to the east, which is Lake Michigan. And then the north boundary is Oak Street, and then the south boundary is the Chicago River. So it's a fairly small, well-defined area that I call my neighborhood. And, you know, when you think about it in terms of a distinct neighborhood and talk about its characteristics, you know, we talk about the tourism here. We talk about the commercial retail. We talk about the tourism in terms of hotel. We have a lot of hotels in our area, a lot of fancy hotels and then a lot of moderate hotels. And then we also have Northwestern University's medical campus, which is a huge part of our neighborhood. It seems to be growing bigger and bigger every day. And so, you know, we've got a lot of mixed uses, and then a lot of residents who live here and participate to some degree or another, you know, whether they're employees of the university or people who are retired and have been here for years, or, you know, students or workers from the, you know, commercial and economic interests in the city. So it's a pretty fascinating neighborhood, Streeterville itself.
So you have a pretty nice mix of people.
Absolutely, right here in our in this particular neighborhood. And then all throughout Chicago, I'm looking at a list on the internet, and they identify 215. But depending on your source, it ranges from 177 to 250, you know, distinct neighborhoods in the city. And they all seem to have, you know, evolved around some identifying feature, whether it's a hospital or a school or a natural feature like the river. People tend to, you know, characterize their neighborhoods by what they see around them. And so we've got all these little neighborhoods that have, you know, identified themselves on that basis.
So you have the actual geographic breakdowns of these neighborhoods. Streeterville just is, or SOAR is just involved with Streeterville. Do you know if there are any other similar organizations in some of the other subdivisions, if you will, of the city?
Absolutely. Dozens,
they are.
If not hundreds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a very interesting history of community involvement. And, you know, again, the participation in these varies, depending on, you know, who's civic-minded enough to participate. You know, there are some people that prefer just to be left alone. They want to go to work and play and not really commiserate with their neighbors, so to speak, but instead focus on their family and friendship. So what I'm trying to say is not everybody is involved in these community organizations.
Right.
But for those who are interested in them, they provide a very valuable outlet for folks. And, you know, some of the organizations are geared towards the residents, as this SOAR group that I'm involved in, but others are more commercial in nature. They might be small chambers of commerce, or they might be rotary clubs, or they might be, you know, Toastmasters. There's all kinds of different community groups that are based on different neighborhoods in Chicago.
Okay, but Toastmasters, I mean, I'm a Toastmaster, so I know that we don't really get involved in the community, although, it's a whole different aspect than what you're discussing or describing as what's, as to what SOAR does.
Sure. Well, maybe that wasn't such a good example, the Toastmasters. But, you know, there are certain other groups, whether they're, you know, clear community-based advocacy organizations like SOAR or a Chamber of Commerce. There's all kinds of different groups that, you know, have the neighborhood as their focus.
What I'm interested in is seeing a group of people, regardless of how they come together, whether it's sort of a small section of a city like Streeterville. But I think it empowers the citizens because now you've got committees, you've got people who are willing to get involved in really shaping their neighborhoods and shaping the future, as opposed to just sitting by and letting things happen.
Yeah, and that's a lot, again, it's a lot of function as to, you know, how involved people want to be, how interested or disinterested they are. Traditionally in Chicago, we've had people organize on the basis of politics. You know, they organize according to what ward they're in. Our city is divided up into, you know, dozens of these political wards, and each of the wards elects an alderman, and then there's also political committee men, and, you know, just different ways of organizing and affecting, you know, legislation and, you know, things of that nature.
In neighborhoods, some of the older neighborhoods that don't have mandatory membership associations, you quite often will find a civic association. It's an organization of the local people who get together and do pretty much what you're doing, but on a much, much smaller scale. And so I'm excited to see what you guys are doing on a bigger scale. But SOAR is not new, is it? It's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah. It's I think origins go back to the 70s, if not the 60s. And, you know, mind you, I've only lived in this neighborhood for a couple of 3 years. So that's an example of how open and welcoming a community organization like this might be, even for people who are new to the neighborhood. They love for people to get involved and to embrace the community and to participate. I actually serve on the board of the organization now, which is likely a result of me getting involved and volunteering. I said yes one too many times.
Hard to say no sometimes, right?
Next thing I know, they were asking me to serve on the board. So you get back what you put into a community. And if you can't tell, I'm very passionate about that subject, and I think it comes from my city planning roots. I love to volunteer. I love to participate because I can look around me and say that I had an impact on that new planter that's going in down the street. Or if I see some new recycling containers appear, you know, magically in front of the building, I can say, hey, I had an impact on that. I suggested that.
I did
and
that.
That's the kind of thing that drives me. And to be honest with you, there's a fair number of other people around who enjoy making a difference in the place they live.
I also noticed on your website that you have something like 600 members, SOAR does.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that may sound like a lot to you initially, but I think that's too few. You know, I've made several comments about it really depends on those who choose to participate. You know, we've got 10,000 residents here in Streeterville, and our organization formally has 600 members. That sounds a little low to me. So we're constantly on the go trying to improve that, inviting people to social events, town hall meetings on various subjects, you know, always constantly trying to build people's interest.
What does being a member entail? Do you have to be serve on a committee? Do you have to get involved with doing anything, or is it just showing up and maybe supporting the boards and the committees and all that? What does membership involve?
Typically, it involves supporting the organization through a very modest financial contribution. And then the main thing, as I've been saying, is that we're looking for people to participate, to come to the monthly social events, to come to the town hall meetings, to come to the presentations that we facilitate to talk about new developments, to, you know, participate in different functions that we have. Again, it's just to get, you know, cleanup days, whatever, you know, the event of the month is. We're trying to get people to come out and to associate with you know, like-minded people who live in the neighborhood.
We're talking to Tom Besore. He is a member and sounds like someone who just really is a mover and shaker in Chicago in a neighborhood, in an organization called SOAR, which stands for Streeterville Organization of Active Residents. Tom, again, thank you so much for being with us today. You had said you want to expand this and get a little bit beyond your little area, or you're starting a new organization, or you want to tell us where you're planning on going?
Sure. As we mentioned earlier, I've been very active in the Condominium Affairs Council in Streeterville, which is kind of a subset of the SOAR group, and it's a subset of individuals who are in leadership positions at their condominiums. And that means they're either on the board of directors or they're on some sort of a committee. They're taking a extra interest in their own particular condominium property, or in some case co-op properties. We have some co-ops in the neighborhood. And we've been meeting on a monthly basis and been seeing some terrific successes in terms of our ability to collaborate, to share ideas, and even to save money. And so we recognized that, hey, this really is a terrific concept. Why don't we see if we can expand this to other areas of the city? And I don't believe we have in Chicago a organization that's, you know, primarily directed by residents, by the ownership interests of these buildings. Sure, we have a couple other, you know, national organizations that are out there, but those are, you know, very heavily influenced by commercial interests, by developers, by lawyers, by managers. What we're talking about is grassroots, small-time committees of people that want to share ideas specific to similar buildings or similar neighborhoods. And so there's talk about forming a Chicago Condominium Affairs Council as opposed to a Streeterville Condominium Affairs Council. And our idea is to create a nonprofit enterprise that could be funded and operated on a grassroots level, again, without heavy commercial influence by other interested people. And so this is in its infancy now. It's in discussion stages. I think we've identified a board who might, you know, serve as an initial board of directors, and I think we're going to go ahead and file our papers of incorporation with the state government and then apply for federal recognition as a tax-exempt organization so that we can take donations from our, you know, individuals that are tax-deductible. And we're going to start small. We're going to reach out into some other neighborhoods. Again, I mentioned there's like 200 distinct neighborhood areas, probably a dozen of which might be the first targets because of their density or their, you know, proximity to us or, you know, our fascination with the particular neighborhood. And we're going to see if we can get this snowball rolling, generate enough interest similar to the interest we show, and, you know, build kind of a model of how we can come together. Because we think we're onto something really good here, and we'd like to share it with more than, you know, just our immediate neighbors.
Well, I think you're onto something really good, because this is something that has been discussed and talked about across the country with a lot of grassroots people, and for some reason they just haven't been able to get it together and get it moving, although there are a lot of little organizations in the states. Each, you know, a number of states have some very active groups and some very active organizations. And there's been some talk about trying to take it national as well. I'm not sure what we do at the national level, but I think, and if you listen to the interview with Evan, he talked about that. He said, you know, now's the window of opportunity that you really want to get in here and pull something together. I agree with him. I don't know who's going to do it, but I do agree that it is time that something happened. So you're starting this group off in Streeterville?
Well, the Streeterville Condominium Affairs Council has been operating for about a year, and as I said, we're looking to expand. And, you know, some people from the Streeterville group may choose to participate and others may not. It's just, again, we're looking to expand out into other neighborhoods and try to help other neighborhoods, you know, build similar successful organizations like we have. So we're going to be reaching out to a couple of, you know, discrete areas, contact some condo board leaders in those areas, and come up with a couple of small meetings and, you know, see where they go, which is exactly the way we started in Streeterville. You know, several of us met together the first month or two, and then word started to spread, and other people reached out to us, and we reached out to others, and, you know, the group just kind of snowballed. And the key characteristics that we have here, I think, are density. There's a lot of these properties in close proximity to one another, so it's not like they're spread all over the state. We have a certain nucleus of you know, properties that can get together conveniently. And I think that has a lot to do with the success of an organization, of an initiative like this. And then the other thing we have is we have leadership. We have the people who are interested and committed to making this work. So many of us are drawn in so many different directions in life that sometimes it's hard to prioritize and really act on these, you know, fanciful ideas we may have in passing in the back of our head. So in this particular instance, we've got a key group of a dozen or so individuals that are really passionate about this and would like to make these things work. I know I've heard a lot of interesting commentary both on your show and from other sources about some of the negative implications of condo association living, you know, the private governance and the costs and the expenses. But there's another angle to approach these things, and that's from a very positive perspective, to say, to recognize what the weaknesses and the failings are of this system, but also to recognize the capacity we have to improve them. And so that would be my focus from the perspective of a condominium affairs council. How can we come together recognizing the limitations and building upon characteristics that will lead to better success? To a higher quality of life within these private communities. So that's kind of the way I'm going with this.
Well, in Chicago's an urban, obviously an urban area, and you probably have pretty much mostly high-rise buildings with a few smaller, lower, single-family homes. Is that correct, or am I?
No, absolutely not.
I've never been to Chicago, just O'Hare. Okay.
I'd have to say that it's truly a fascinating mix, and I wouldn't know where to begin. I think it's only in the central city area, you know, along the lakefront, up and down Lakeshore Drive, you've got a preponderance of high-rises. Here in Streeterville, in the West Loop, in the South Loop, you know, the central core city area is where all the high-rises are.
Okay.
But I think more characteristic of Chicago housing would be the properties out in the, you know, main area of the city, which consists of bungalows and two flats and four flats, and, you know, of just a huge variety of housing options are available for people here. Some of which are, you know, traditional apartments, others are single family homes on, you know, very dense streets. and then others are these smaller condominium properties. And so we've got the gamut that we can reach out to here. By no means get the impression that it's all high rises in Chicago.
Well, I know if you look at the pictures, a lot of the pictures are the high rises and probably the Streeterville area that we see. How many of these outer lying housing developments are old or new? How old are they?
Well, again, Chicago has developed, in a traditional city sense over the past 30 years. There's been a lot of infill. There's, when you get out in the suburbs, you've got a lot of the, traditional sprawl and, whatever the characteristics are associated with the urban fringe. That's all pretty much newer stuff. But, the central city area, or, the Chicago city limits proper, has just been slowly developing, I guess you could say, ever since the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. It's just been this continual process. You've got the housing boom that happened when the baby boomers were born, or when people came back from World War II, a lot of houses went up. You really can't categorize it other than, in the most general of fashion.
Well, one thing that's happening where I live, which is in Fairfax County outside of Washington, D.C., and that is that they're tearing down some of the older developments. So the stuff that was built in the 60s and the 70s that, you're talking about following the boom, post-war boom, and they're replacing it all with high-rise buildings. So although we were suburban, we're sort of turning urban now.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything, the housing choice is disappearing. And I think that's one of the big problems that you hear about, is that people don't really have the option of where they live anymore. There are a lot of municipal mandates that mandate high rises. They mandate homeowner associations. They mandate all kinds of things. And so if you don't like it, then you've got to move away. And it's either going to take you 3, 4, 5 hours a day to commute back and forth, or you've got to move into these areas. And I like the idea that, if you've got, you work with what you have. And I think that's what you're saying, is you work with what you have. You've got these high rises, you've got these developments, you've got these associations. Let's get together, let's take control of what we have, and let's make it a positive experience, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself.
I don't know, you're doing great. We're talking to Tom Besore, and Tom is moving Chicago right along, I think. It sounds very interesting. Have you approached anyone from other little neighborhoods to see if they would be interested to come on your Chicago Condo Affairs Council board?
As I said, this is just in its infancy. We've got just about a year under our belt operating here in Streeterville, and we've identified, some areas that we might like to branch out towards, areas that are still fairly close to us. But we're also, looking at what's out there already. We need to come up with a plan. So I guess we're still in the planning stages. We want to see what's out there already, what models we can follow, and be a part of a well-thought-out initiative that expands beyond our neighborhood. So we're just not quite there yet. Hopefully into the fall, I could see us starting this up and reaching out to more and more people.
So you said you've only been around for about a year, and then you say you're still, I understand a year is not a whole long time, but are you organized? Have you got, you say you've identified a board. What have you been doing for a year? Just talking about it or planning or anybody?
No, the things we've been doing for a year are meeting in our own community as the Streeterville Condominium Advisory Council.
Okay.
We've had about a dozen meetings. We meet monthly to just talk about what's going on as far as a leadership perspective in our condo buildings. We've talked about management company interactions with boards of directors of condos. We've talked about recycling options that are available to us. We've talked about you know, provisions of other services, whether it's cable television or electricity or natural gas to provide energy to our properties. We've met these dozen times and pretty much had the discussion of the day, the discussion of the month, you know, whatever somebody's really excited about that's happening at their property, we kind of go over. And, you know, we've used this period as a time to collaborate, get to know one another. And the more times we get together and become familiar with each other, we're starting to strategize about what else we can do as a group. And we want to develop, you know, things that will definitely save us money. Maybe we want to produce white papers or, you know, best practice papers to talk about what's the best procedures to use when switching vendors from one to the other, or for collecting overdue assessments, or for protesting, you know, tax increases from our property taxes. We're trying to come up with ideas to provide a tangible value in addition to the great value we get just from networking with one another. And so these are the things we've been developing over the past 12 months, and that's been the primary, you know, direction of this initiative. It's only over the past, I don't know, 30 or 60 days that we've talked about, hey, why don't we reach out to other areas, and while we're building this infrastructure, maybe we can develop a model that can be used in other neighborhoods so that other people can share in our successes.
So it's pretty broad. I mean, what you're talking about is not narrowly focused, really, is it? You've got a lot of different issues that you're concerned about.
Sure. I mean, it's broad in terms of you know, the issues we can address from a condo board leadership perspective. But on the other hand, it is a very narrow initiative, primarily directed towards, you know, the leaders, people who are very actively involved either on the board or some committee associated with condominium living. And, you know, that's a lot more narrow than, say, a group of homeowners association across the country who happen to come together and chat. You know, it's a very specific initiative.
It is a specific, but I mean, you're dealing with all kinds of different things. What's your vision for this? If you could sit down and describe how this whole thing is going to come together, what, you know, hindsight, looking back on it, what do you see this as being?
I see some sort of a programming tool coming available for different communities to organize in the same fashion that we have. And I think of for lack of a better way to characterize it, I think of a franchise, whether I'm opening a Dunkin' Donuts or a Starbucks or something. You know, these are enterprises that provide you with basically a turnkey solution. And I don't know why I'm thinking of restaurants, but a Subway sandwich or a Quiznos. You buy into this system that provides you with all the tools necessary to begin your enterprise. And so if we could develop something like that so that people interested in organizing their neighborhoods into you know, a condo affairs council, wherever it is, it doesn't even have to be limited to the city of Chicago. It could be in some other part of the country. That's my vision. And, you know, another question is, where am I getting this vision? I'm getting this vision from things I see already in existence in other parts of the country. I'd like to recognize the New York Council of Condominiums and Cooperatives, which has given me a lot of inspiration from their website. They have links to videos. They have their annual survey of building operating costs. They have their seminars that they produce for people. So in a sense, I'm building upon some of their successes that they you know, describe on their internet site. And I just think this is just another step in a trend of people wanting to organize themselves to improve their communities.
It sounds interesting. Have you communicated with the folks in New York to see what growing pains they may have had or what stumbling blocks that they had to overcome so that you could avoid some of those things?
We will through the process. I've had one conversation with their executive director, a very limited, you know, greeting, hi, how are you, that kind of thing. But it's a lot easier to, you know, surf the internet and to see what they're doing and just kind of take ideas from the successes they've had there. But I know they have a conference in November, and so the executive director suggested that maybe I'd like to come out there and get some person-to-person interaction, shake some hands, and learn about some of the things you just talked about, their successes, their limitations, so that we can build on their successes and, you know, minimize any limitations.
Wow. And this is a conference the actual activists put on, the advisory council puts on.
Yeah, they've got their annual housing conference in November.
Well, are you going?
I don't know.
You're thinking about it, huh?
Absolutely. All it costs is time and money. And, you know, there's just so much going on in you know, my life and everybody else's. This is kind of a passion, but you commented earlier that these types of initiatives have sprung up in the past and nothing has really stuck. Well, you know, that may be a function of the time and the commitment and the passion people have to share. You know, the economy is tough out there. We're all trying to earn a living and, you know, take care of our family and, you know, business at home. Sometimes it's easy to forget that, you know, these things take a lot of energy. And I don't know about you, but I wish there were more than 24 hours in a day because I just can't get it all done.
Oh, I know. yeah, I have the same problem as well. It's interesting. I was part of an organization here in the Virginia, Maryland, D.C. area back about 20 years ago, before we had internet, before, you know, before it was easy to connect with people. It was called the Council for Homeowner Rights. It is now defunct, but it was interesting. We got together and we had our meetings, and we held open meetings. We got the local radio stations to advertise the meetings, and we were just inundated with people who showed up. But what happened was people got tired of it, and they just moved out of their associations, and they said, sorry, I'm not part of one anymore, so, you know, I'm not going to get involved. And so they took off and left. So, you know, but CHR collapsed, but others are still going strong. So, that's not an issue. But yeah, it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of passion. It takes a lot of determination and a lot of single-mindedness to just push something like that through, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Once you get Chicago, are you looking at maybe taking it statewide, or is that too far down the road?
Well, in theory, that sounds like a great idea, but, you know, the whole premise of this particular initiative is grassroots and local, and that kind of implies sticking close to home. That's not to say that, you know, what we're doing here couldn't be used as a model, but I certainly would not expect my own self to be involved on a statewide or a national basis, simply because, you know, home is where my heart is. It's where my energy is. You know, it all starts with people who, you know, live in the community. You know, I'm more than happy to, you know, communicate with other people in other areas of the state or even out of state, because I've benefited from a lot of experience that people have shared with me. And so naturally I would like to do that, but will I be interested in, you know, forming a national advocacy organization? I'm sure that something similar might already exist, number one. And number two, that's a pretty bold and ambitious thought right now. We're working on Chicago, which to me seems like a pretty big place already.
How many hours roughly do you put into this on a weekly basis?
You know, it's, I don't know, maybe 5-10 hours a week, you know, just making phone calls, chatting with people, trading emails back and forth, you know, and immediately leading up to our monthly get-togethers, I might put in more time organizing a little program or calling people to make sure that they remember the date of the meeting and finding out if they've got anything specific they want to share, putting together a little agenda. So, yeah, I put in a fair amount of time.
So it is time consuming.
Absolutely. And so multiply that by many different neighborhoods or statewide, and you could see that could easily be a full-time job.
Yeah.
You know, that's all well and good. That may be an initiative that needs to take place, but we would have to address, you know, how that's going to be funded. Because if it's a full-time job, you're kind of implying that you're going to have a full-time paid individual to operate it. And along with that comes, you know, certain conflicts that might be inherent in where you're getting your support. And so what I'm leading up to is, you know, some of the limitations we may see from existing national organizations might have to do with, you know, people questioning who's behind it. you know, whose interests are really being promoted from an economic perspective. And that's why the small grassroots, privately funded type of initiative is useful to allay any kind of concern that there's undue commercial influence.
Have you
not that that may be a good thing and it may be a bad thing. You have to understand that having a commercial influence or having commercial support is both a blessing, you know, and a burden at the same time. You just need to maintain your perspective and understand who's paying for things.
I agree with you. By commercial, are you thinking of the Community Associations Institute, CAI, that represents the managers and the attorneys who make their livings off HOAs? Is that off condos?
That would be one particular example, but you know, I don't care whether you're talking about our specific issues here or any other kind of trade association or interest group. The same, you know, factors applies. You oftentimes have to follow the money to see where the influence is coming from. And the goal, at least in my mind, is to avoid any semblance of conflict of interest by, you know, restricting your funding to, you know, the specific targets who you purport to represent.
So you're basically funded by member dues.
Mm-hmm.
How much, can I ask you how much it costs? And how, I mean, what's your budget like?
I'm not particularly in tune with the finances of my local neighborhood group, other than to say that I think it costs us $50 or $75 for a family membership per year. And that's a suggested donation. Some people who might be of more limited means will contribute a lesser amount, and we're happy to have them. Other people might contribute more than that standard. And especially when there's particular, you know, initiatives involved, some people might find that that's close to their heart and offer a sizable contribution. You know, it just depends.
Tom, we're almost out of time, but I would like you to give us your web address. And do you have a website for the new organization, or is it way too soon for that?
Yeah, that's under development.
Okay.
I think if people want to keep track of the initiative, they could do a Google search of Chicago Condominium Affairs Council. I've been playing with a website and trying to come up with a format and a template. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. I'm looking at different templates that will facilitate communication among us, the sharing of information, that sort of thing. And so I'm just kind of tinkering with it. So it's going to come and go for the next few months as I have the time to put into it. But if you just want to keep track of us, there is a website out there, but you know, the specific addresses might change as we you know, develop our formal entity and, you know, come up with some kind of a branding strategy, so to speak.
So right now it's the Chicago Condo Affairs Council, right?
I think right now the site is condoaffairscouncil.org. Put that in there and see what that comes up with. Yeah, and that's just a blank template that I'm using.
Okay.
So it needs to be updated. Like I said, this is an idea that's in its infancy. Check back in a couple of weeks.
How about SOAR? You want to give us the
address? Oh, yeah. The SOAR is www.soarchicago, SOARCHICAGO.ORG, and that's the website of the Streeterville Organization of Active Residents.
Check it out,
and
folks.
And if wants, you know, specific information, they're free to shoot me an email, thomas@besore.com, BESORE.com, and I'd be happy to communicate with you on this subject.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us, Tom.
It's my pleasure. I can't believe the time went by so fast. We've been chatting almost an hour.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home, yet the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.